So would you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, I'm Ida Maria.
You look like her, you sound like her. I guess this will work. It's a start. What's really funny is that I have a rule on the air that when I like a record, I call it an oh my God. And I went on the air that weekend, and I kid you not, and I said, I'm about to play an oh my God called Oh My God, which was totally ridiculous. So the name of your song made for very, very funny radio. But then I looked at MySpace, and this was a while ago. You had like a million people who had gone to the profile, and your record wasn't even really, you know. Can you explain that to me? That's a lot of people, Ida.
Yeah, no, I can't explain that really. But it was, yeah. I started out with my MySpace in 2007, I think, or something like that. And it was very interesting because I didn't know before I put my songs out whether or not they were going to get any attention. But I think through MySpace, like, my music kind of, you know, I realized that there's people out there listening to it. So,
is it true that your family doctor was the one who introduced you to rock and roll? Is that happenstance, or is that actually true?
Yeah, that's true, because, you know, my dad wasn't very much into rock music. He liked like softer stuff. I don't know. He's very into funk and soul and R&B, like old R&B, and very much jazz and blues and all that. And he plays in a ska band. So I kind of, when this family and this doctor moved to Nesna, which is the small village where I'm from, he brought his whole record collection, and I was babysitting his kids, so I kind of started listening to like every single different thing, like Jimi Hendrix and all that stuff, and it really inspired
all
me.
All the classic rock.
All the classics. I never heard it before.
It wasn't even new wave stuff. It was classic.
Well,
rock.
It was like Talking Heads and Television and everything. He had like this huge record collection, so it was like a new world for me. I didn't really know that world existed before he moved to Nesna. So that was like just before the internet, and you know.
So I have to give this quote to you because it's one of the funniest quotes that I've read in a long time, and it was from another interview. You said, "I was always a very quiet person until I discovered alcohol."
Well, I still am a very quiet person. I guess.
So what's really interesting about Japan, and I talk to a lot of bands about this, is, you know, bands like Cheap Trick, right? Pop music in Japan is absolute king. So I would imagine you are really revered over there already. Is that true?
Well, I didn't know what to expect because it was my first time. And we came there, and we came there the day before, and we watched Oasis, and it was 50,000 people. Just totally quiet. They didn't say a word. Like, they clapped for 5 seconds, and then that was it. And it was quiet like a church. Really strange. So I was like thinking, I wonder why. I wonder if this is gonna happen to us tomorrow. I was really scared. So I realized that I think I have to speak to them, you know, because Liam and Noel, they're just like cool, and they don't.
Of course.
They don't ever speak to their audience, you know. So I realized I had to speak to the crowd, and it went crazy.
You communicated with them.
Yeah, and it was that easy, and it was like mental. It was crazy. The guards picked up like 20 people over the, what do you call it, the shield? No, what do you call it? The barrier.
Oh no!
It was awesome.
But you moved to Bergen when you were pretty young, and I've interviewed. It's amazing. Bergen was written up recently as the new Seattle. I mean, there are an immense amount of bands there. There's a big scene for such a small place, right?
Yeah, it's been like that for a long time. It's been like that, but it's a great place, and I think the reason why it's so good is because people cooperate. Anybody's trying to compete each other out, they always, people, like bands always rent out, like borrow out gear to each other and help out, you know. So it's a very special place, and I haven't found anything similar. Maybe Austin, Nashville, maybe. Like, if you meet the right people, you can record for free, and people just give you studio time if they think that you make something worth recording.
But you headed for Stockholm, and that's where you met the boys.
I was kind of ready to have a band at that time because I've been playing by myself for a long time, and it was nerve-wracking. I was so scared before every show. I went up there and I had all these thoughts, like, I hope people will like my songs and I hope they don't hate it, and you know. So I was like thinking, I really need to get a band. I need to hide behind something, because my songs are way too honest to carry on two shoulders.
You need other shoulders to
yeah
carry them on.
So now we've got 8 shoulders and it works quite well.
So the record was recorded while you were on tour in 4 different places. So now, they weren't different producers, but there was a final mixer afterwards, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we recorded it in Gothenburg, Oslo, and London, and Stockholm, I think.
But then you went back and you kind of looked at it again, right? And looked at the visual and stuff. So what was it? Was it just that you said, oh, we did this on tour and I just want it to be as good as it can possibly be? Was that pretty much the scoop?
I had so many ideas for how I wanted it to be. I was really unhappy with like the picture on the front. It didn't look like me. I looked way too pretty, so I wanted to under-pretty myself a bit so that people wouldn't expect me to be pretty all the time, because that's a drag, you know? So
it's hard being pretty. It's work.
Yeah, but I mean, like putting on makeup every single day and fixing my hair. I can't stand that. I'm just not interested in that. So I realized that my cover will give people some kind of image that I cannot live up to. So I had to change it.
People have worked so hard to write about your stage show. Do you think that when audiences come, because of all that writing that's been done, you know, she does this and she pours water on, do you think that audiences, you know, have a different expectation than they should have, and that they're paying, they're almost there more for that than the music? And is that something a journalist is doing a bad thing by doing?
I think we play all kinds of different types of shows, and it's not always so much about all the crazy stuff or whatever, you know. It's still about the songs, and I think my songs can stand for themselves, and I think I've become a bit older. I didn't want to turn into some kind of destructive artist, you know, smashing up things and hurting myself on stage. It wasn't planned. It was just that I kind of came into this adrenaline rush and I did stuff that I kind of broke my ribs once, and it became like everybody's written that somewhere. And it's kind of annoying, because I've never ever do that again. It's not like Iggy Pop cutting himself up, you know. They don't get that hair. Sorry.
No, you've got to help me, because my favorite songs in the world, in all of my years, are the ones that sound like pop songs and the lyrics are really, really dark. So if you actually listen, as I spend a lot of time doing, to what the person is saying about their life or about the lives of people around them. So can you help me pronounce this gentleman's name? Because I know he's one of your...
Oh, Håkan Hellström. Actually, I can't stop loving Håkan Hellström, because he is... He writes songs in Swedish. And just because of that, the English-speaking world will never really... be able to enjoy his music, which I think is even more amazing in a way, because he makes this fantastic art, and it's only people in Scandinavia that can understand what he really says. And I've been spending lots of time trying to translate his songs, because they are so beautifully written. But I just realized...
Have you thought of doing a cover of some of his songs?
Yeah, I've thought of that many times. I think, you know, it's very hard to translate poetry, especially when it's such good poetry. So I think I would have to pay a lot of attention to and really think it through, you know.
I have to ask this, because one of my favorite things, because I've been to a lot of Letterman and Leno and all those tapings, and it always scares me when I see a really, you know, a band like yours and you on a show like that. So what was that like? Was it a good experience?
Well, it was kind of funny, because downstairs was the backstage of Hugh Jackman, which I just realized they say that he's the world's most sexy man or something. I didn't really think he was that sexy. He had way too much spray tan, but you know, he was nice. But it was funny, because he was on the show and I was singing I Like You Better When You're Naked, so I was able to dedicate it to him, which I think is quite rock and roll.
Because you pick one of the sexiest men in America, and then you kind of politely rip that whole mode, yeah, and strip it down, so to speak.
That was headlines in Norway, Norwegian papers, because he came up and gave me a hug. So I was very happy with that, because I felt that I got the whole situation in my hands, and I kind of did something that people didn't really realize until afterwards.
What is a question that you wish someone would ask you in these interviews so you don't have to answer the same things again and again? Is there anything you've ever said, I really just want to answer this and no one's ever asked it?
Why do you want to play music? Why do you want to write songs?
Hey, Ida Maria, why do you want to play music and write songs?
Well, I think maybe I can make people happy, or I can, maybe I got some ideas about certain things that needs to be put out, and for me it's the only way I can put it out, through music.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.